morning, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the BBJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. This is our new regular Friday show on veterans issues, most especially those relating to Vietnam veterans and the epidemic of glioblastoma. Before we get started with our guest today, I want to thank Sheree Evans, of course, for setting the show up. She always does all the legwork on these shows. And I have something I wanted to say. I was just sent a message right before the show about possible cuts to housing for veterans through HUD and homeless veterans. And it is true. They are talking about cutting not only assistance to the elderly and housing, but vouchers and grants given for housing homeless vets. They're going to cut that out because, you know, we appreciate their service so much. And so I think what we need to do is get a hold of Dr. Ben Carson, who's now heading up HUD, and let him know what we think about this unique plan. One of the things we could have done to cut costs of the federal government is the Congress could be forced to participate in the national health care plan and pay for their own insurance, just like the rest of us do. And we can quit providing special services to provide them security, because, you know, after all, they're royalty. We could do a lot of things. I think we ought to cut their pay. I don't know why we have to pay them at all, because as far as I can tell, none of them working for us. But that's my thought. But anyway, like I say, I'll keep up on this. And the idea that we keep these ongoing illegal wars going, and then we bring these people home and throw them to the side and treat them the way they do is totally, totally unacceptable. And I think more needs to be done, and we'll be working on it. I want to remind everybody of Operation Stand Together, which is going to take place on the Mall May 20th in Washington, D.C. You can go to the website, www.operationstandtogether.org, and that's all one word, Operation Stand Together. And all the information you need is there. Vincent Deem heads that up, and find out if you can attend or what you can do to help out. Secondly is the Vietnam Veterans Festival being planned in Illinois for September. This is open to the public. It's basically just a celebration of these veterans and the contributions they made to that war, again, having been so casually treated by the government since then. And there will be vendors there selling various things, food, entertainment, and it's basically just a big public get-together to basically acknowledge these people, their service to our country, and let people know they're still out there. They're still out there, and they need our support. Now then, moving on to our guest for today. We got a Cracker Jack coming on, and his name is Paul Sullivan, and he is with Bergman & Moore out in Bethesda, Maryland, and I thought erroneously that he was an attorney. He is not, and doesn't claim to be, never did claim to be. He runs the outreach at the national law firm Bergman & Moore in Bethesda, and this firm focuses only on veterans' disability compensation and pension claim appeals before the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And he's worked with them before. He's back with them now. He has been Secretary of Communications at the California Department of Veterans Affairs, CalVet. And he has more than 25 years experience advocating for veterans. And he's also a veteran himself. So welcome to the show, Paul.
Well, thanks for having me, Marty. I'm really glad to be here, and let's have a fun time, but let's make sure we educate our veterans so we're all motivated to get involved and improve the situation for all our veterans.
Well, I agree, Paul. And one of the things that, you know, we've talked about and that I've had firsthand experience with is when the veteran has a claim, and most of them think that they can just walk into the VA and that's all there is to it. And this is where they run into trouble. Now, there is a process for this, right? A correct way to do this.
Oh, absolutely. And here's what everyone needs to know. We can use this show today to basically lay some myths to rest by educating our veterans about what's going on. And the first myth is this. Everyone seems to think at VA that our veterans file claims for disability benefits so our veterans can get a big fat check and then do nothing. And that's so not true. The number one place where our veterans file disability claims is at a VA hospital or clinic. And the reason our veterans file claims at hospitals is because that's where a veteran has his or her first contact with VA. The veteran went there because he or she is sick, they want to see a doctor, and VA says, sorry, you're not service-connected. Here's a whole bunch of paperwork you have to fill out. And that's how the claim process starts. So the real reason veterans file claims is to get health care at VA for free. And that's what we need to remember, because veterans come home from wars or, you know, peacetime service with lots of physical and mental health problems that they didn't have before they joined or were made worse due to their military service. And the first step a veteran needs to make in the whole claim process is to never do it alone. Oh, my goodness. The best place to start is with a veteran group that's accredited through VA. Sit down and have someone explain the entire process, not only just for disability benefits, but you can also learn about education benefits, home loan benefits. There's a whole wide array of benefits veterans have earned because we served. So the first thing is, let's kill the myth. Veterans don't file claims to get money. Veterans file claims to get care. And the first thing veterans should do is get help when they want to start their claim. And the best place to start is either a veterans group or a county veteran service office.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, this thing that they just want something free, they want a handout. Excuse me, these are the people that stood up and went to war in your name so that you could stay home. This is not a handout. This is something we promised them. This was part of the contract. Yes, exactly.
Right.
We promised them we would
earned.
Take care of them. Yep. Then to treat them this way and to promulgate this myth that, you know, they're just looking for a handout. They just don't want to work. They maybe can't work like they did before. And the other thing is, too, Paul, if there had been any physical or mental disabilities, they would have never been accepted into the service. So don't tell me whatever happened. You know, to them now, the condition they're in now is not related to it.
You're exactly right. And that's what our veterans need to know. It's something called the healthy warrior. That means for someone to be accepted into service, either as a volunteer or even a draftee back in Vietnam or prior conflicts, veteran had to meet minimum physical and mental health care standards. And if there's something where a veteran feels that either psychologically or physically, the veteran feels that something is different, they need help, the best thing for our veterans to do is reach out and ask for help. Now, you may hear stories all the time, oh, VA's slow or VA's got paperwork. Okay, that's true. But the most important thing, if I was to ever give a message anywhere to fellow veterans, and I'm a Gulf War veteran, is if you need help, don't worry about the stigma if it's a mental health condition. Don't worry about anything else. Go and get help. And that means usually starting with the service officer at a veterans group or a county that explains the process to you so you can get in right away. Now, if the situation is more serious, like a veterans in mental health care crisis, absolutely, veterans should know. Don't hesitate. Pick up the phone. Call the 1-800-273-TALK number. Press 1. And VA has 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, free counseling of veterans who are in crisis. And it works.
Oh, wow. Well. Now, see, I didn't know about that. I did not know about that. This one of the things that always concerns me when we talk about the mental health issues, and I think we talked about this earlier, is the drugging. And I am vehemently opposed to drugging, except in the most severe of situations. Therapy, being around other veterans who understand what you've been through, what you've witnessed, what you were ordered to do, trying to comprehend what you did do, seems to be one of the largest problems our returning veterans face. And yet, there again, they are marginalized and minimalized for this. We used to call it in World War II and World War I, it was shell-shocked. And then I can't remember what the catchphrase was for it after Vietnam. And now we call it post-traumatic stress. But you cannot take people out of their ordinary lives, put a gun in their hand, and send them into hell and not expect them to come back. It's a rare person who will come back disaffected by that.
Veterans come back, and you're right. I have not met another fellow veteran who's been deployed to a war zone who came back the same. And what's important for our veterans to know is, first, it's okay to talk about it. Second, it's okay to get help. And third, you want to know, for some veterans, you know, you can come back and have some challenges, and I have. But the other thing you can do is channel some of your anger and some of your challenges into productive things, like helping other vets. And that becomes very therapeutic. So many veterans I've known doing this for 25 years since I got home from Iraq was that, you know, it's really beneficial to know that at the end of the day, we were helping veterans learn about their benefits, learn about their health care, and make sure that they get it in a fast, friendly, and quality way that our government's supposed to do it. And every generation seems to have to go through this. We have to learn to fight to make sure that we receive what we earned.
And the idea that you have to fight for it to get what was promised to you, and like you say, that you did earn. I just don't know where people's conscience is these days. When you see this going on, you talk about, you know, all the paperwork with the VA and everything else. Paul, I don't know about you. I'm a person who organizes. And I've managed several businesses in my past. And one of the first things you do is make sure everything is organized and run efficiently. Now, if you've got an administration that is so bogged down in many times repetitive, redundant paperwork, and you've got this process so complicated, it's complicated for reasons to keep you out of it. But if you really wanted to economize and save money and do things efficiently, I don't mean economize in the sense of shortchanging the veterans, making sure they get the best health care possible at most economically. Wouldn't you streamline the system? I mean,
absolutely. For our veterans, here's the most important thing our veterans need to know. If you need help, reach out right now. And there are other people like you and me who are trying to fix the system so it's better, and legislators are trying to fix the system, and we hope the new administration can do some stuff that would fix the system. The main thing is never let these horror stories of paperwork and delays prevent a veteran from going to get help.
Right.
Go and ask for help. That's the first thing that we got to do going out the door. And you're right. When I was with a group called Veterans for Common Sense, we held a press conference, I believe in about 2009 or 2010, in San Diego with a gentleman by the name of Bob Filner. He was the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And at the press conference, I stacked up these huge boxes that had red ribbons around them and big bows on top. And we had a big pair of scissors. And what we wanted to do was tell people we needed to cut VA's red tape. Sounds reasonable, right?
Yes.
Well, here's what we did. We had these big boxes all surrounded by red tape, and then I pulled out VA's claim form. And in 2009, 2008, right around there, VA's claim form was 26 pages.
Oh my God.
I went on TV in this huge room full of TV cameras and said, imagine you're a veteran with TBI, with PTSD, depression, right? You've been over in a war zone. Do you want to face a 26-page form? That's ridiculous. That's anti-veteran at its core.
Yep.
And the congressman, the chairman, he's like, you know, Paul Sullivan and Veterans for Common Sense are making a lot of sense. Well, you know what we didn't know is that as a result of that press conference, some really smart people at VA went into a room and they developed a claim form now that's about 6 pages. It's not one page, right? It's not like the easy tax form that you all get.
Right.
But is essentially what we did as veterans is we pointed out a very specific problem, a 26-page form, and came up with a solution, make it shorter, and then VA listened. Because at the end of the day, veterans don't need to face mountains of paperwork. They want to be able to see the doctor right away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
yep.
That's kind of the common sense stuff that we can do. Now, how does all that translate into claims? Well, let me tell you what's going on right now. VA has more than 1 million claims pending at all of their 50-plus regional offices. And right now, if a veteran files a claim and goes through each of the stages of the appeal, the veterans are VA is taking about 1,700 days. That's 4 years, almost 5 years, to process the claim through all the appeal stages and then return the claim back to the original regional office and then finally process it. That's
long. I can't believe it. That is absolutely ridiculous. And what is this veteran supposed to do in the interim?
The veteran's not getting health care. The veteran's health care is usually getting worse. Okay?
Oh,
now, my suggestion to veterans is, as soon as you get a decision called a rating decision back from a regional office, you need to make sure that you go back to the veteran organization or the county service officer that helped you with the claim, and you got to do it because there's certain time limits. You got a year on the first rating decision to make an appeal. Well, go in right away. Don't wait. Go and sit down with your advocate, look at VA's decision, because here's what veterans need to know. About 5 or 6 years ago, VA had an error rate of 30%. That was according to VA's own Inspector General. Now, there's fewer Inspector General reports, but according to VA, and I think this number may have some challenges, but according to VA, they've got it down to about 14% of all claims have a serious mistake. And here's what I mean. Did VA make the wrong decision to either grant or deny service connection? Usually deny. Did VA set the right percentage? In other words, VA only granted 10% where VA maybe should have granted 30 or 50 or even 100%. And then did VA set the right effective date? Oh, we see this all the time at Bergman & Moore. VA will grant the claim for the veteran based on the day the VA made the decision. And remember that 4.5 years we just talked about, Marty?
Yeah.
VA should have made the benefit retroactive all the way back to when the veteran filed his or her claim. And that's why veterans need to sit down with an advocate right away, or if their appeal is real complicated, they can call us up at Bergman & Moore, and we'll walk them through what's going on, because there's more than one way VA makes a mistake. Most veterans focus on just getting a denial, okay? But veterans also need to look, did VA grant the right percentage, and did VA grant the right effective date? And these are so absolutely critical, because it could mean the difference for a veteran in getting $100 a month going forward from today, or maybe getting $40,000 or $50,000 in retroactive benefits and getting free care. So it makes a world of difference.
Paul, this gets, you know, the announcement I made at the beginning of the show about HUD and Ben Carson, who's the head of HUD now, looking at this $300 million cut to housing for homeless veterans. This is vouchers. This isn't money that's put in their hand. It's a voucher they get for housing. How dare they? How dare they even consider this? And this stuff irks me so bad that I can't hardly stand it.
So what you've heard is that there's going to be how many $100 million in cuts?
$300 million.
My goodness.
You know, as to the vouchers, and this was reported in USA Today and the Washington Post and everything. They got direct quotes. $19.5 billion going to be cut for housing to the elderly. For, you know, subsidies, rent subsidies, they're going to cut all this money out because apparently we're just useless eaters now. And But at the same time, they're trying to vote themselves a raise. You know, they're in D.C. I have a problem with this from the top down. I don't see the problem as being from the bottom up. It's from the top down. And we have got a Congress in which only two members in either house have ever served. And the rest of these yahoos aren't going to go to war. They're not going to put on a uniform. They're not going to send their children or their grandchildren. They're going to send yours and mine and us, if we're young enough. They're going to send us, and then to bring us home and make these decisions about something they have never experienced themselves, didn't ever have enough spine to experience themselves. I just think this is incredulous. And they're sitting there like, this is a good deal. This is a good deal. There's a lot of cuts that could be made to government in wasteful spending. Homeless veterans is not wasteful spending. I don't consider this wasteful. We owe them this at the very least. At the very
right.
least.
I just checked the congressional website, and there are 80 members of the U.S. House of Representatives who are veterans. I don't know how many of those have gone to war. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
I only think it's a couple.
Yep.
But there's 80 veterans. It used to be a whole lot more. You're right.
Yeah.
And that's the disconnect, Marty.
Yes.
You know, I give speeches, and I was at the University of Pennsylvania. I was at the University of Texas in Austin and other universities. And I'll explain to the students and the faculty that are there, our country's been at war for 26 years.
Yes.
And people go, really? We have? And I'm like, we've bombed Iraq almost every day for the last 26 years.
Yep.
Okay? And they go, wow. And you see, that's where there's this disconnect. And out of 300 million people in the country, I think it's about 320 million, we've got about 3 million who are in the active duty military or the reserve or the guard. That's about 1%. So we have 1% of our population that's actually involved in the fact that we're currently at war. And that's why there's this disconnect. And as you're telling me, that some of the real important benefits for veterans, the HUD-VASH vouchers that help our veterans, may be cut. I mean, that would be just tragic. How
could
anyone in the middle of a war cut something for homeless veterans? That just, it boggles the minds. It just does.
It does. I've got an email here from a listener who said they weren't aware that we had been at war steadily. Yes, we have been. And if you go back to, I believe it was 2013, Hillary Clinton at the Military Contractors Convention bragging about how we were involved in 94 armed conflicts around the globe that the American people knew nothing about. And if they wanted to get in on the ground floor of making money, they needed to get their contracts submitted then. And the point is this, then when they come home, as we've seen with the Vietnam veterans and veterans of other wars, but most particularly Vietnam, you have to prove you were boots on the ground. You have to prove they already know exactly where you were and how you served, in what capacity, and what you were exposed to. But somehow, this gets shifted onto the veteran that you must prove you were there. You must prove you were on the ground. You must prove this. You must prove that. When these people have a more detailed record on you than you could ever possibly imagine. And this is part of this system to keep you out of it.
Well, that I just want to make sure that folks understand that for about 95% of veterans who deployed to the Vietnam War, you're correct that all the veteran has to do is assert he or she was in the war zone, and VA can look into a computer and determine whether or not it's true. The problem is that it's about 5% or more in error. In other words, there's a bunch of people who should be on the list, but they're not on the list. So what VA does is they go through all this extra paperwork just to make sure that you really were there. And that's a horrible situation. I can let you know that it is remedied now.
Okay.
I worked while I was at VA very closely with the Department of Defense, and you are correct. The United States is currently involved in military operations in more than 90 locations. But it's not 90 countries, it's like 90 locations, because that includes bodies of water. Okay,
right.
I know that sounds silly, but
no,
the South China Sea is a body of water.
Mm-hmm.
And there's places like the Spratly Islands. Most folks don't know where that is. It's off the coast of China, Philippines, in Vietnam, in Asia. Most folks don't know that that's been declared an area where service members would receive hazardous duty pay for being in a war zone. And it's been that way since 9/11. So that's just right. So the military now, just in case anybody has concerns, you're right. The military knows exactly where everybody is almost all the time. Unless, of course, you're in the small percentage of special ops groups. And then, of course, that information is more tightly held. And then, just so everybody knows, there is a very specific way where service members who served in special operations can have their service in a special operation war zone documented in a classified manner and have it handled with VA. The veteran just has to make sure that the veteran tells their advocate, their county service officer, or their veterans group that they were involved in those type of activities, and then a special records request is made to the Special Operations Command to confirm the service. And all that happens very quickly, but the veteran has to right up front let people know that so that the claim is processed properly.
I've got another question here from email,
sure.
And they want to know what you might know about Gulf War sickness, the exposure to depleted uranium, and how those claims are handled.
Well, there's bad news, and then there's good news.
Okay.
The bad news, and there's several pieces, is that the Department of Defense still uses radioactive and toxic uranium in our tank rounds and in the helicopter rounds fired at hardened targets like tanks.
Right.
They're called SABO rounds or DU rounds or depleted uranium rounds.
Mm-hmm.
So the weapons are still in use and the battlefields are still contaminated. The second piece of bad news is that VA and DOD have done very little, if any, research on the harmful health effects of the uranium munitions.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that it is harmful, and there are some veterans exposed to DU who have had cancerous tumors and whatnot, but the military doesn't want to say that there are health problems associated with the weapon because, frankly, I can tell you as a scout who served in the Gulf War, the weapon is toxic, yes, but it's also highly effective. I've seen our DU tank rounds fired at Iraqi tanks, and it literally blows the snot out of them. It's a one-shot, one-kill. So DU is harmful. It's still being used. The military and VA aren't doing any research. And then here's the last piece of bad news. VA is still denying about 80% of the Gulf War illness claims.
Okay.
Now let me give you the good news. If a veteran finds an advocate who has been trained on Gulf War illness claims, and the veteran makes sure that they appeal within the appeal times, okay?
Uh-huh.
That the veteran does have a significantly increased chance of having a better outcome. And let me explain why. Okay? I did an analysis of Gulf War claims when I worked at VA, and it was more than 10 years ago, so this is a little bit dated. I got to throw in that caveat. We found at VA that if a Gulf War claim was processed at an office where the employees had training, and that there was no huge backlog, in other words, there was no piles of claims on the VA employees' desks, that the VA employees were approving more than 30% of the claims.
Okay.
All right? Conversely, here's what we found. The offices for claims processing, the regional offices at VA, that did not have training and that had big backlogs were only approving between 4 and 8% of the Gulf War claims. And that's just not right. So that's why if a veteran received a denial or a low rating or a wrong effective date on a Gulf War claim, a Gulf War veteran should seek out an advocate who's been trained in handling these to look at the paperwork. Would you like to give you some examples of where VA
yes.
made mistakes?
Yes.
Well, I've looked at literally hundreds of Gulf War veterans' claims for Gulf War illness. I have seen denials from VA where VA would, in VA's rating decision letter back to the veteran, VA would say, "We are denying your claim because we do not show that you served in Iraq."
Mm-hmm.
Well, the veteran served in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And VA would deny the claim. And the veteran would walk away and not appeal because the veteran would go, "Oh, I had to be in Iraq." That's not true. All the veteran had to do was serve in what's called Southwest Asia. That includes
right.
Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and a whole bunch of other places that are in the regulation. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of times on appeals, what we would do is get the veteran's DD-214, highlight
right.
in yellow marker, service in Southwest Asia, right? And then
okay.
maybe include a copy of their Southwest Asia service medal that shows that they went. And highlight that in yellow marker. And on the appeal, simply state, "Hi, I'm the veteran. I disagree with you, the VA. You denied my claim because you said I wasn't in Iraq. Well, the regulation says I had to serve in Southwest Asia, and here's the evidence that I served in Southwest Asia. I appeal the claim. Grant my claim." Oh, and the veterans would call me 6 months, a year later, and they go, "Paul, I won."
Yep.
And I go, "Right. What you had to do was sit down with someone who is an advocate, look at VA's mistake, and then file the appeal." I've seen other decisions where VA would rate the claim at 10% or have a wrong effective date. In
mm-hmm.
other words, VA would grant the claim as of the date VA decided the claim instead
mm-hmm.
of when the veteran filed his or her claim.
Right.
And the veterans would win those. So this is why it's real important. If a veteran has a Gulf War illness, first, you're not alone. There are 400,000, 500,000 veterans from the Gulf War who are in the toxic areas, and there's about 200,000, 250,000 veterans that VA concedes are sick as a result of the toxic exposures. So don't hesitate to file the claim. Yeah, I know you're going to hear about denials. I know you're going to hear about delays. But sit down and carefully explain with your advocate what's going on, and your chances of winning go way up.
I've got email flying in here. I've got 14 so far coming in from veterans of these escapades. They're in Iraq and Syria or Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and all of that, and asking if you know anything about the testing of the anthrax vaccine on the military before they went into these areas. Now, a little background on that. I have been following this anthrax vaccine for quite some time, and I know here about 4 years ago, because so many in the military were getting sick from it, they were going to begin testing this vaccine on toddlers, and we raised a big stink about that. They're probably still doing it, who knows. But do you know anything about this testing of this anthrax vaccine? Because the one gentleman here says, he said, "I became immediately ill." And he said, "have suffered ever since." He said, "I've had seizures, outbreaks of rashes directly associated with this vaccine, and yet I can't get compensation."
Well, the first question should be this. If there is a notation in the veteran's records while he or she was in the military, and the records show that there was an adverse reaction to the vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's important evidence to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then if the veteran can show that he still has that condition rashes or whatever else happened, okay? Because in order for a veteran to win a claim, a veteran generally has to be able to show three things. The first thing is that the veteran has a current condition.
Okay.
Simply being exposed to Agent Orange or having an anthrax vaccine, okay, that doesn't automatically get benefits, okay?
Right.
The veteran has to show that they have a current medical problem. It could be rashes. It could be some other long-term impact from the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the second thing that the veteran has to show is that something, quote, happened to the veteran. In this case, the veteran's alleging that they received an anthrax vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Then the third thing a veteran must show is that there has to be a competent medical opinion that says the reason our veteran, just to use the current example, has rashes now is because the veteran started to get rashes when the veteran was in the military, when the veteran got the anthrax vaccine. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's a very specific language that says as likely as not, because a tie goes, of course, to the veteran. Or the medical professional can say, hi, I believe they're associated. But essentially, those three tests have to be met. A current condition, something happened in the military, and a doctor's opinion that tie the current condition to what happened in the military. That's generally how most claims work. There are exceptions like presumptions. But what the veteran may need to be doing is finding evidence in their file that shows they received the vaccine and that at the time they received the vaccine, what happened. And then the veteran needs to show that they have a current condition. Because I'll be fair, from the government's point of view, it's entirely possible that a veteran may have had a fever and a temporary rash at the time they took the vaccine, and then it went away. Okay? So if the veteran has no current medical condition, the government's not going to compensate or give care to the veteran if the condition went away. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, except for one thing. When it comes to the testing of vaccine, and I know in the military, especially since the DOD changes under Rumsfeld in 2003, where they can test any vaccine or biological weapon on the military and even the public without informed consent, and that they do not have to keep a record of any of this and admit to anything at any time. He also singled out pregnant women and minorities were not exempt from this. What I had found out at
there have been some changes on that.
Yeah.
And just so anybody who's listening, it's not a straight line. There's lots of bumps and mountains and valleys. I can tell you from my firsthand experience that right before our scout platoon and the 1st Armored Division invaded Iraq, medics came up to us and said, hey, here's a shot that will protect you against biological warfare agents. And anthrax is a biological warfare agent.
Right, right.
And they asked us, who wants the shot? Everybody raised their hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we rolled up our sleeves and they went boom, 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 and gave everybody the shots. I have a really nice scar, by the way, on my shoulder from the vaccine shot.
Right.
Nobody in our unit got sick at that time, okay? But you're right. At that time, the military basically ran up and did the best thing that they thought they could do at the time. I'm not defending them. I'm trying to explain
it. Right, I understand.
And there's a difference. Because if somebody had found out, well, Iraq did use anthrax, and you had this test vaccine sitting in boxes and you didn't give it out, and that's what the military likes to say and as their reasoning. And they've got a little bit of cred to go with that.
Right.
But that was 1991. And after a lot of service members did fall over, I had friends of mine in other units that received the shot, and they literally fell over, and they were never the same since.
Right.
We do know that there are going to be a small percentage of people that are going to have an adverse reaction to just about any vaccine. It's going to be a small population. We know it. It might be a fever or something else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the important thing is to make sure it was recorded in the records. And here's where I have a real problem. The military didn't write down that I received the anthrax vaccine in my records. That's
a big
problem.
Intentional. That was intentional, Paul. That I know from research and Senate subcommittee hearings, that was intentional, that this not be recorded.
So what we had next, okay, and I think you're referencing the Riegel report from 1994
mm-hmm.
and whatnot. Okay, and I worked with Senator Riegel's staff in the 1990s, giving them documents for those reports. Well, then there was another anthrax vaccine that veterans had to receive in a series of shots. And there was at one point a restriction that said not to give the vaccine to women who were pregnant or who were about to become or trying to get pregnant.
Yes.
And you're right on that. And the military did a really bad job of keeping records, right? They did
mm-hmm.
a really bad job of doing the research to see what kind of problems result in the long term, because you really can't tell the negative outcomes if you don't keep records.
Exactly.
And you nailed it on the head. And we call that the don't look, don't find policy for the
mm-hmm.
military. Depleted uranium? True. Chemical warfare agents? True. Anthrax shots? True. The pills that we took? True. The military, by not keeping adequate records and then not doing research right away, basically was able to wipe their hands and say, no problem, because they didn't look, and then they, of course, without looking, they didn't find. And
mm-hmm.
that's a tragedy for our veterans. And all we can really do now is hope that it's better. And this is where I want to go with this. And your emailer, the veteran who wrote in, raises a really important point. Veterans who were exposed to toxins, whether it was burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
depleted uranium and pesticides and pills in the Gulf War, Agent Orange, right, in the Vietnam War, any of those things, we have or should have a right to know what these are doing to us and to
yes.
get care for it. And one of the things that we do at Bergman & Moore, and it's highly individualized, is we actually do focus on some of those really hard-to-win claims for toxic exposure. You know, our good friend, Tiger, Cherie Evans,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are veterans like her who fought very hard on glioblastoma cancers to make sure that VA would grant benefits for those. And Bergman & Moore was more than happy to appeal her claim and work with her for years. The glioblastoma is not one of the presumptives for Agent Orange.
Right.
But we were able to show with a doctor's opinion that that cancer was related to her late husband's service in Vietnam and
yes.
his exposure to Agent Orange. This is why it's really important that veterans not do their claim alone. Veterans have a professional from the very start of their claim. Do you want me to give you a horrible story about why this is important?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, you and I have just met on the phone, but
mm-hmm.
let's just say I ran a red light, Marty, and there's
okay.
a traffic camera there, and my car hits your car, and you're really badly injured, right?
Okay.
You would expect, especially if I was like the police that ran into you, that you would keep the camera from the accident, right? Keep the video
mm-hmm.
footage. And
right.
that I would keep the report, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, imagine that you want to come and sue me, and then there's no video. They didn't keep it, even though there was a camera at the intersection. And then there
uh-huh.
was a report written about it, but nobody kept that either, right?
Oh.
And then the only person that you get to ask for help on suing me is me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, God. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you see where I'm going with all this?
Yes.
Money?
Yes.
This is
exactly.
why, you know, veterans out there, they don't have to come to Bergman & Moore for assistance. What we really want to share with veterans is you're not alone. The toxic
mm-hmm.
exposures are real. The harm to veterans is real. But don't be out there, you know, just banging your fist on a table, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go and sit first with your claim with someone who's been trained to help with that kind of claim. Look, If a veteran goes into a county service officer and the county service officer doesn't know how to process an Agent Orange claim, find somebody else, right?
But most of
the county service officers are getting better training these days than they were in the past. Because some of them would throw up their hands and go, I don't know what this depleted uranium is, and they wouldn't file the claim.
Right?
And the veteran would be stuck, and the veteran would get justifiably really, really mad. Mm-hmm. But what we've got to do is don't get mad, get smart, get educated, get somebody on your side. You know that traffic accident scenario I just gave you?
Yes, yes.
Get your own advocate on your side, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that somebody preserves that video evidence and preserves that report and is acting on your side, because the claim process is complicated. Don't do it alone. Veterans, we need to know, and this is true in my case, it took an attorney to fix my claim after 8 years of waiting. Okay? That's why it's real important. Now, the attorneys aren't the end-all, the be-all. Okay, they're not going to win every time. I don't want to set unreasonable expectations.
Right.
But at least have somebody in your corner.
Right. Yeah, and that's, I've advised people, I have friends that are veterans of Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and that's what I've told them. If you have to go to the VA, even if you're going for a doctor visit, take an advocate with you. Take somebody there who can witness what was said, what was done. Mostly, I think this is where a lot of people in many situations, Paul, don't realize you need that third party there to record what happened, what took place, what you were told, what was said. I think one of the most frustrating and enraging things I have discovered in the last 2 years, whether it's in the private sector or in the VA, is that the medical reports that these doctors write, you, honest to God, if you read your own, you'd probably go postal. Things that were never said, things that were never done. You would think they were – my own impression when I got my own files was I looked at this and I thought, well, they must have got my information mixed up with somebody else's.
They did with me.
Yeah.
They had somebody else's records in mine.
Oh, good God. Oh, good Lord. But a lot of people, as a test, we, and some of them veterans, demanded our medical files, the actual reports that were on file. And people were just enraged at what they saw in these files that bore little to no resemblance to
this
what actually had transpired.
We need to channel the rage into productive change. Let me give you an example that's really clear. Most veterans don't know this fact unless they listen really closely at congressional hearings, or unless they've worked at VA, or unless they work at a veteran group. Here's why it's really important for veterans to have an advocate when a veteran files his or her first claim or reopens a claim. Did you know, Marty, that when VA drafts, and I underline the word drafts their first decision, they quietly give it on paper form to the veteran group, and they get 2 business days to look at it, 48 hours. Some places they get 72, but most of the places it's 48 hours, to look at VA's draft rating decision. And the veterans groups have testified in front of Congress that they found errors in between 10% and 30% of the draft decisions that VA makes. And the veteran group, or the county service officer who's the advocate for the veteran, politely goes face to face and says, hi, you got this wrong, and this wrong. Okay, and the VA fixes the mistake before the decision ever becomes the final rating decision from the regional office. This is why I kind of sort of don't believe VA when they say that their claim accuracy is 86%, is because that 86% is after the veterans group got to take a peek at the rating decision and fix it. Okay?
Wow.
This is why I really want to emphasize for veterans who are starting the claim process or reopening their claim, get help now. And if a veteran got a decision that they don't like, the effective date's wrong, the rating is low, or the veteran got denied, pick up the phone, go see your advocate right away, or if you're not satisfied with that or you got more questions, call up Berkman and Moore and see if there's something that we might be able to do to take a look at VA's rating decision to see if VA made a mistake.
You know, the thing is, when I look at the number of veterans we have, and I look at the number of veterans that we have that are homeless and suffering, mm-hmm. and I look at the number of veterans who are trying to access health care, somebody needs to look at this system and figure out why it is the boondoggle it is. And honestly, Paul, after years and years and years of dissecting legislation and reading Senate reports and this and that and something, I have concluded that most of this is intentional. It's intentionally set up to keep you out of the system.
I'll give you that it's really complicated, but it's mm-hmm. not as bad as that. I will say this in all defense. I was on 60 Minutes about 7 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I'm one of the people that helped blow the claim delay scandal at VA in 2007. Of course, it's been a scandal forever. It wasn't just me.
Yes.
And the 60 Minutes interviewer asked me a really important question. They said, well, we keep hearing all this story about how VA wants to stop fraud on claims.
Uh-huh.
VA processes more than 1 million claims a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
How many do you think out of those 1 million were fraud found by VA?
None.
It's usually about 10 or less. You want to know why? It's because the first thing that VA does when VA receives an application for benefits from a person is to determine whether or not that person is actually eligible and then entitled to get the benefits. And here's what I mean. Remember how I mentioned a minute ago how VA can check to see if someone's a Vietnam veteran?
Yes.
Well, most of the World War II and Korea and the Vietnam veterans, if they were going to file a claim, they would have filed it already.
Right.
So most of the claims are by the younger Iraq and Afghanistan and Gulf War veterans, right?
Right.
With the click of a button, VA can tell, did that person ever serve in the military? And VA every day sends back claims where the person didn't qualify at all. Okay, so it's really important to note that, yeah, VA is really tight. There's hardly any fraud. But what's happened is that VA, they've made it easier to say no than to say yes. And here's why. This happened in the trial, Veterans for Common Sense versus the Department of Veterans Affairs, that was filed in 2007. We learned that VA employees are given what's called a work credit. Kind of imagine like a poker chip. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if the employee gets more poker chips depending upon how many claims the VA employee processes. You following me?
Yes.
Well, VA admitted that for decades, VA has emphasized speed, okay, how many claims VA could process, rather than quality. Because if the VA employee gets the same poker chip for denying, and it's way faster and easier to deny, you just say no, than it is to approve. Because if the VA employee is going to approve the claim, then the VA employee has to determine what's the effective date for the veteran's claim, what's the percentage rating for the veteran's claim, and do
mm-hmm.
all this additional work. So it takes longer. So what do you think happens if you're a VA employee and you got a pile of claims out the door on your desk in the hallway,
mm-hmm.
right? You're going to go, well, if I get the same number of chips, whether I grant or deny, what am I going to do? Boom, 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 boom. Okay. So I kind of understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a little more nuanced than that. The VA system is very complicated, very little fraud. And it's easier and faster for VA to deny than it is to approve. And if veterans know that the system's complicated, don't do it by yourself. Get an advocate to help you out. Because who wants to wait in what's called this hamster wheel for 4.5 years on appeal? Wouldn't it be better if you went in up front having an advocate help you to do it right the first time?
Exactly. I've always pushed for the advocate system just as support, if nothing else. But in this instance, in filing the claim, like you say, they can go to veterans groups who will help. And they usually have those locally too, don't they, Paul?
Yeah, and almost every county in the entire United States at the courthouse is going to have someone called a service officer. Now, there's different levels of training. There may be a new person in the office or a more experienced person in the office. It's really important for the veteran to go in, and when they're asking for help, be serious. Say, hi, I'm one of the veterans that was exposed to burn pits, and my claim is going to be kind of complicated. Do you have somebody that does that? Can I talk to that person?
Yeah.
Do you see, just going in and asking those questions, being a strong advocate at the beginning of the process is going to make it easier for everybody. Now, in a perfect world, if I had a magic wand, we would say, can we hire some more people so that there's not this backlog? And can we make sure VA employees get trained so they don't make all these mistakes? That's really what we need to be doing. And, you know, Bergman and Moore actually had me testify about that, maybe 5 years ago or so. And I basically made it clear, sure, Bergman and Moore, we can help a lot of veterans on claim appeals forever and ever. But we actually think it would be more prudent if VA and Congress said, look, let's hire some more people, let's do some training, let's have the right kind of computers, let's do it right the first time. Right?
Yeah,
so I think we can all agree on that, right?
Streamlining, making it efficient.
For our veterans, not for VA. Make it easier for our veterans, like with a shorter claim form instead of 26 pages.
Yeah, that is absolutely ridiculous, Paul. I cannot. We've only got about 2 minutes left here. You want to give out any contact information that you want to have out there?
Sure. If there are veterans out there that want a free consultation on a claim appeal, they're more than happy to take their calls at our number, toll-free 877-838-2889. And the law firm is Bergman and Moore. We're one of the largest in the country. All we do is veteran claim appeals on VA benefits, 1-800-838-2889. And our website, if you want to learn more about us, it's real easy, www.vetlawyers.com, vetlawyers.com. Marty, I'm more than happy to talk about benefits and the big picture with you anytime because, you know, VA is a huge agency. There's a lot of really good people who work there, but it's also a mess, and it could use some help.
Okay, think about this coming Thursday evening, if you've got time available. I'd sure like to have you on our whistleblower show to talk about another aspect to all of this. I think it's important that people hear you speak, mostly because you obviously know what you're talking about. And so if you would consider that, and I'll be in touch with you about that. I want to thank everybody that tuned in today. Thank you, everybody that emailed in. I hope I got all your questions asked. And I'm sorry I didn't have the chat room open, but we're having technical difficulties with that, which seems to derail the show. So we're leaving that alone for right now. Paul, I want to thank you so much for coming on. This has been a stellar interview and a lot of good information. And I hope everybody took notes. If you didn't, the show is available in archive on TS Radio Blog Talk for eternity. You can go there and download it or just sit there and listen to it again. There's no charge for that. We will be back next week, I promise. And once I get all the shows set up, I want to say goodbye, everybody. And again, thank you, Paul.
Oh, thank you, Marty. Glad to be on. And it's all about putting our veterans first.
Yes, sir, it is. See you, everybody.